Hi, friends.
Hello, should I delete that, listeners?
We still have some tickets left for our live tour and we would absolutely love to see you there.
On Thursday, the 23rd of May, we will be performing in the London Islington Assembly Hall.
On Monday, the 27th of May, we will be in Salford.
On Tuesday, the 28th of May, we'll be in Glasgow.
Sunday, the 2nd of June, Birmingham.
Monday, the 3rd of June, Bristol.
And Tuesday, the 4th of June in Southampton.
You can get your tickets at aegpresents.co.uk or via the link in the show notes or our Instagram bios.
We really hope we see you there.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
And I found that period of life very isolating, quite lonely. Everyone was sent the handbook of life and mine was lost in the post.
Hello, hello.
Hello.
Such losers. Hello.
Hello.
How you doing?
Good. I'm good. I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I've got so much to tell you.
What?
It starts and ends with the fact
yes.
that I went to my street party.
Oh,
good,
God.
Good, bad, and awkward's everywhere.
Oh, my God. All three from the street party?
I think so. The awkward.
Hit me.
Awkward. It's not mine. I'm stealing this from someone else. I mentioned that I was invited to two street parties, my own and one in Crystal Palace.
Okay.
I decided last minute I didn't want to go to the Crystal Palace one. I was going to go to my own. I was going to be a brave girl.
Yeah, good on you.
Thank you so much. And my friend mm-hmm. who lives in Crystal Palace.
Yeah.
I've got two friends that live in Crystal Palace. One of them, it was her street party. My other friend, it yes. wasn't her street party. But she had also been invited to the street party. So
right.
she went to the street party.
Yeah.
She got there.
Yeah.
They said, "Where do you live?" And she said, "Not here." And they said, "Well, you can't come in."
No, you're kidding
me.
And
everybody on the street had name tags.
No.
So they were asked to leave the street and go back to their own sad street, which wasn't having a party.
That's savage.
Savage.
Oh, my God.
Savage.
That's such stupid, like, that's such petty gatekeeping.
I know. There's a bouncy castle and everything. And her little toddler
oh God,
saw the bouncy castle.
Castle. I was thinking more for her, but her toddler.
Yeah, broke it up.
Oh.
I think they let the toddler in. And I think the parents were allowed them to go and see the toddler. But that's my idea of horrendous awkwardness. I'm so pleased that wasn't
Thank
me.
Thank God you didn't go.
Thank God I didn't go.
So is that your good?
Yeah, my goodness that I didn't go to Crystal Palace.
My goodness something bad could have happened and it didn't.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
That's my kind of
I'm going to drip feed you anecdotes from the street party
okay,
whilst
okay.
you please tell me something good, bad or awkward.
I didn't get to go through all my awkwards from Tenerife last week. So, okay. I did this like stupid little reel, right?
Oh,
and
yeah.
it's of, I think, is it Nickelback?
Love
Hang
Nickelback.
On, I'm going to show
was
you.
Nickelback.
Was it Nickelback?
Right, well, Daisy knows which one of your reels was stupid and little.
So it's Nickelback. I'm going to play it, right?
Love this song.
Right, I'm going to show you, right? So it's the Nickelback lead singer, whatever, at the start
I'm
of this
totally
video.
I'm totally going to listen to Nickelback the whole
and
way home.
He's holding up a photograph as he says, "Look at this photograph," right?
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, I'm going to do this with Betty, right? I'm going to write nobody, colon, you know, like the cool kids do, me away from my dog for more than an hour, right? Watch it. I will give this to Amy to put on the Instagram, but I put it up and I think it was up for like 10 minutes and I don't think it had like 40 likes.
Oh,
and I did that and I'm embarrassed,
no.
I'm ashamed, but
oh,
also
no.
you guys are my people and you know what, I'm like, I deleted it.
Oh no, Daisy, you saw it?
I'm surprised.
It was got...
I thought it was funny.
I thought it was so funny.
Did you like it though?
Don't know.
Probably not. Only 40 people. Done. That is hilarious.
How embarrassing.
Mortified. Isn't it such a gamble when you think you're being really funny? Like, I did it with my reel last night where I thought I was quite funny and then I uploaded it and it did all right.
Which one?
The one where it's like all my ugly faces when I was exercising.
Oh no, I haven't seen it. Yeah,
like,
I'm so shit.
It was a bit funny. In my head, I was like, this is hilarious because Alex watched it and he was like, ha ha ha. I was like, thank you, because I'd have been devastated if he hadn't done that. And then I uploaded it and I was like, oh.
No, that happens to me a lot, actually.
So cringe. But on TikTok, you can upload this stupid shit and it goes so well.
I know.
It goes so well. So I'm trying to channel my TikTok. Back to the street party. So I went, sorry for your loss.
Don't judge me, guys, for being pathetic and deleting stuff because it doesn't have enough likes.
I get it.
I'm embarrassed.
It's a modern world, it's cruel. You've got to,
it is what it is.
You do what you do. Do what you do to survive. My awkward is the fact that, I mean, it couldn't have been worse, right? I went.
Yeah.
It was nice. I had nice day.
Okay.
I actually stayed for 4 hours.
4 hours?
4 hours. It's actually quite awkward to go home.
What do you do for 4 hours? Talk?
Yeah. It's very hard to leave a street party because it's on your street.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, you people are boring me now. I'm going to go back into my own house. Do you know what I mean? It's a hard one to leave. People just watch you walk into your house. It felt very like Sims like that. Yeah. You know, where everyone's just like standing outside a house and then one person just randomly goes into another person's house. It felt like that. It was nice. A few embarrassings. First one, my next door neighbour, direct next door neighbour.
Yeah.
This is very awkward. Last week, I said on the podcast, I think we might be friends. I said right? She follows me on
Instagram. No.
And we're not friends. Yeah, I don't even know her surname. But I'm the podcast, I'm like, so I think we might be friends. Like, we get on really well. And then when we talk at the street party, she's like, I follow you on Instagram. And I was like, oh my God. I've talked about you.
Oh my gosh,
and I've massively over-egged our friendship.
She will have listened. I bet you she's listened to the podcast.
So fucking embarrassing.
She just doesn't want to say because
so fucking embarrassing because she isn't my friend. I don't know her that well. I'd like to be a friend. She's a really nice woman, but we're not there. So that's embarrassing.
That is embarrassing.
Really embarrassing. Really embarrassing. So yeah, that's my awkward from the street party. Anything else?
Okay. You know what? I'm gonna forego my good this week.
Oh no!
Because nothing that great has happened, and I've got so many awkwards.
Look how brown your legs are.
I know. Oh. It's fake tan.
Oh god, they look so good.
It's a good one.
Your legs look so good.
They look so brown, don't they?
They look so good, but like just like muscly. And
oh my god,
you look so good.
It's the tan, I think.
Do you want to feel really good about yourself? Mine are really hairy and pale. Are they? I'll show you if you want.
Yeah, go on. Let's see. Can we take a picture for them?
Yeah, we can.
They're not bad.
They're not good.
Not that hairy, Jesus.
There's just blonde hair, but if you do you want to stroke it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they're hairy. Can't confirm that they're hairy.
Anyway, sorry.
So in Tenerife, Dave and I were in the supermarket, and it was a really quiet little supermarket, and we were, the night before, we'd had black squid ink rice.
Saw it on your Instagram.
Yes. Fucking gorgeous. Anyway, Dave had, after this meal, had a poo, and the poo was black because of the black squid ink rice. He had literally shat himself. He was so scared. and I was too, and it took us a second to realise that it's because you had
did
the black...
Did he bring you in to show it?
Literally, yes.
He did?
Yes.
He made you look at it?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. He's disgusting.
He's disgusting. He has no boundaries. Yeah.
Oh my god.
And I was like, oh my god, what am I gonna say? Like, I need, this is for his health, like I need to
Dr. Light.
And I was like, Dave, what did we eat last night? Black squid ink. Anyway,
can't believe he made you look at it. I've never seen anyone's poo that isn't my own, apart from those random abandoned ones in like public use sometimes.
I've seen like 20 of Dave's.
Oh my god.
Anyway, gross.
How weird. I've never seen one of Alex's. Mind you, I've said this before, he takes himself off to poo.
Because he's normal.
Yeah.
Anyway, later on, then we were in the supermarket. Supermarket was really quiet. And I just said to him, I wonder if your next poop will be black, right? And he was like, yeah, I don't know. It might be out of my system by now. Anyway, a second later, I swivel around and this girl's like, oh, I thought that was your voice. She's like, is it Alex? I was like, oh my god, I'm so sorry. I wonder if your next poo will be black.
The familiar docile tones of Alex Light.
And nearly died. Oh my God. She listens to the podcast, so she will hear this.
No.
And if you did hear me say that, I'm so sorry. Although the supermarket was so quiet and there's no one in there apart from us.
Did you assume that everybody was Spanish so you could get away
exactly,
with it?
Exactly, yeah. I never thought for one second. I was just like, hi.
You're a bigger celeb than you know, Alex.
Oh, fucking hell.
Yeah.
Dave just like ran
fame
away.
Fame comes with a price. Yeah. Well, now everybody knows about Dave's black poo. It wasn't embarrassing enough that one random person heard it about it in the supermarket. Go. Now
enjoy.
All of our tens of thousands of listeners get to hear about it too.
You're
lucky
welcome.
Dave.
So, yeah.
Amazing. My final good is probably that I went to the street party. I also met someone who lives three doors up from me from the Isle of Man.
Whoa.
How weird is that? He's literally
so
from
weird.
Like two doors down from where
really?
My grand lived. Yeah, so weird.
Oh,
and
that's
I've
so nice.
Met my own double who lives at the end of the road, other end of the road.
Yeah.
Got married this day before us.
Really?
Had a baby 2 weeks after us and is also going to Bath for her anniversary next weekend.
Really? How old is she? Your age?
A bit older, but she does the same job as Alex.
That's really weird.
Really weird. So we might be being stalked.
I think we're going to be best friends.
Yeah, well, we're going out for a drink.
Oh, yeah.
So I've made a friend, everyone. I've made a mum friend.
Yay, mum friend.
Mum friend.
And the babies are the same age. That's really
good. Yeah, really cool. She's got a little boy. And yeah,
nice.
Really, yeah, actually really nice. Like, I mean, she might hate me. I might hate her. I don't know. But we're going out.
She's listening to the podcast.
Yeah, God, I mean, yeah. I know. I was so embarrassing. Because so, obviously, your man from the Isle of Man, like, everybody knows each other on the Isle of Man. She's like, oh, I know your family. I was like, I am known on this street, not in a good way. Because, yeah, my neighbour says she follows me on Instagram and it's just like, that's not good. No. That's not good. On this very street corner, I have stood dressed as a blueberry, dressed as a roll of toilet roll, sat
with
on a loo. Yeah, like,
yes.
I have done some embarrassing shit on that road.
Yes.
Like, really, really embarrassing.
Agreed.
And everybody's seen it.
I fully agree.
Yeah, and now everybody can put a face to the name.
Gorgeous.
Oh, that's that weird one from up the road. That's nice. Now we know her name. So, yeah.
Love that for you.
Love that. But I did make a friend, so woo, thanks for me.
That's good. My bad, very quickly, is that I have realised that I send people memes all the time. Like, I send people memes all the time, like, constantly. I'm saving stuff, I'm sending links, like, all the time. Like, I just... Funny things.
It's a love language.
Remind me, exactly, things that remind me of people, whatever. No one... And I've realised people don't send stuff back
to me. I do.
You're the only person that does.
Well, there you go. So it's not all people. Not all friends.
not all friends. But most of them.
Yeah.
No one sends stuff back to me. And I was just looking at this WhatsApp group that I've got with a few friends. And I was like, I am the only contributor here. And people just look and, like, occasionally they'll laugh. I'm like, fuck you all.
Fuck them all.
Fuck you all.
Do you want to join my
I'm
family
out.
WhatsApp group? Because that is solely how we communicate.
Yes, please.
I don't know if Katia can still hear us, but wait for a thumbs up to see if you're allowed in. No, she can't hear us. She's not listening. Great, well, just
she
put
is,
you in.
And she's just like, no,
yeah,
she's not,
she's not coming in. Fair enough.
So.
Well, I guess my final bad.
Oh, yeah.
Well, no, I've already had a bad.
Oh, right.
My other one is that after this podcast interview, I went into a huge downward spiral because I realised that my life was going to be completely fucking upended next March. But...
Yes!
But...
Shit.
It's a lovely interview.
So this week's guest is Kagi Dunlop, who has a podcast called Saturn Returns, which was born out of her own Saturn Return. And I didn't know what Saturn Return was. I don't think you really did either. So we learned on the podcast, which was very interesting. Emma's now shit scared.
Quite rightly.
Of what's in store. I had some realisations about my own Saturn Return. And yeah, it was really interesting, fascinating. And she's a delightful, calm presence. It's like a nice, calm...
It did
lovely
feel
interview.
Like that as my world was like completely exploding. It was nice to have a sort of anchor, a port in the storm. So without further ado, here is Kagi.
Enjoy. Hi, Kagi.
Hello.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
I saw you very recently. I saw you just a few days ago at your flat. Because I recorded for your podcast, Saturn Returns.
Yeah, it was a great conversation.
It was. You said before it felt like that. It really did feel a bit like therapy. But in a really good way.
Well, for who?
For me, I think. It was really
too.
Nice. Yeah. And I think that is where we'd like to start is Saturn Returns, because I don't know about you, Em, but I hadn't heard of a Saturn Return before I discovered you and your podcast.
Really?
No, I'd never ever heard of it. I mean, You will have heard of it, right? I'm guessing your face is like...
No, my face is actually like, I'm actually mortified at myself. I don't really understand
What is that? I don't.
Oh, I thought this would be right up your street.
I know. This is what I mean. Like, I'm the worst. I'm the worst at having an interest in astrology because I very much cherry pick. I'm like, well, that applies to me, and then the rest of it I don't understand. So I'd actually love to hear about Saturn return.
Amazing.
Of course. Okay. Well, your Saturn return is essentially something that happens in your late 20s as Saturn, the planet, returns to the same place in the sky it was when you were born. So within the realms of astrology, this is viewed as your cosmic coming of age, or your sort of initiation into adulthood. So at around 29 years of age, we tend to have these big life lessons. Okay. And it can feel quite intense because often they all sort of hit us at once. So that's why usually at this time, sometimes like people's career will all fall apart, and their relationship and their friendships, it will like all hit them at once. But equally, if you've been living in quite a sort of Saturnian fashion, depending on your birth chart and all of these things and how you've been living your life so far, it can just mean up-leveling. So it can mean having a child, getting married, getting that promotion. But the reason I started the podcast is because mine felt, you know, the former. It was like everything felt like it was falling apart. Didn't know who I was, what I was supposed to be doing. And when someone told me about Saturn return, I was just so fascinated by the concept and figured that everyone should know about it. But whether or not you look at it astrologically, I think that's a really difficult time as we approach 30, when we're supposed to have all of these things figured out, and often we don't. And so, yeah, that's why I kind of centralized all my work around that particular
area. That is fascinating. Can I ask what happened? Like, what was
for
your
me,
Saturn return? Is that how you say it?
Yeah. So, during my Saturn, you have also a progressed lunar return, which is something different, but that happens before your Saturn return. And that can also mean a bit of like emotional upheaval. And during that time, I was 27, I was living in LA. And that's when things started to unravel in this way that was like, I was pursuing acting and music, but the more I kind of tried to force it or control it, the more resistance I hit and the more sort of out of control I felt. And I found that period of life very isolating, quite lonely. And like everyone else had filed their life into some kind of meaning, and mine just didn't. I always describe it as like everyone was sent the handbook of life and mine was lost in the post. And then when I came back to London, slightly with my tail between my legs because I hadn't achieved what I had hoped I would, and was kind of coming back to London, not starting again, but it felt a little bit like that. And then I was releasing music, and that was sort of going well, but it didn't feel, I still kind of felt quite emotionally like I knew I wasn't probably doing the right thing. And then the big catalyst for me was a relationship ending, which can often be for people. And my relationship at the time, it fell over my Saturn return exactly. It ended the month my Saturn return ended. And that really catapulted me into everything I'm doing now. But it was a really painful breakup, as breakups tend to be. It was one of those ones, though, that you just don't see coming. And I think, in sort of true form to Saturn return, that's often the way they are, that kind of guillotine style ending where you're just like, I'm single.
So did you know, does one know when their Saturn return will be?
So yes, you can. If you look it up, it's quite easy to look up online. You can get the exact dates. And a lot of people, obviously, through listening to the podcast or reading the book, are now doing that. Mm. What I didn't anticipate by creating this work is that people would then become sort of Saturnophobic and be like, yeah, I've put the date in my diary and I'm terrified of what's going to happen.
I'm going to be honest, Kagi, you said the word guillotine. I'm 28, I'm 29 in 2 months. Oh, I'm like, right, what's coming?
Yeah, to be fair, the language around it, and if you look up a lot of stuff around Saturn return, it is like associated with karma, discipline, responsibility. It's quite heavy and like considered a punitive planet. But actually, the beautiful thing about it is once you're through the other side, you can recognize that all of those things were just helping you become your most authentic self.
Right. Doesn't so it help like, when you're on this side of it? I'm
yeah, like, but I think it's just about, like, if you've been living in alignment with things that are in, like, integrity and authentic for you, it can just mean solidifying that. So, okay. like you said, like, whether that's family or a promotion. But I think I was just off course. Mm. And so it kind of just snapped me back in a way that I wouldn't have been able to do on my own. And it often does that through a kind of rock bottom or like a spiritual awakening. And then from that point, you can build more solid foundations.
Did you know when the relationship ended, I guess, if that was the main catalyst, did you just think, oh, fuck you, Saturn? Or did you like not know?
Well, that's the thing. So when I first heard about it, I was in LA and became fascinated by the concept. At that time, because I was living in LA, like everyone else, I was like, I'm going to write a script about Saturn return. This is such an amazing idea. And then sort of parked the concept and then went back to London and honestly was just, I was still very much dipping my toe into spiritual practices and leaning into the sort of esoteric world. But I wasn't like, oh, this is where my Saturn... I didn't actually know specifically the dates at that point. And when I went through this relationship, I wasn't thinking, oh, this is my Saturn return. But at the same time, simultaneously, I'd been talking to Nora, who's the astrologer for Saturn return. And she was sort of saying, she would say things about like the relationship in terms of like other transits that I was going through that obviously were just quite confusing because she was like, be careful, you're going through like a Neptunian fog. And I was like, what's a Neptunian fog? Oh my God. And then anyway, when it wasn't actually until I wrote the book that I actually recognized that the relationship ended the same time my Saturn return ended. So even at that point, it wasn't like I was... Yeah, it wasn't in the diary, but I was just knew that I wanted to do something around that period of life. And I also knew that I needed to go through it to talk about it. Because when I was like going through it, I was just like, what's going on?
I'm finding all of this really weird because I don't know when my Saturn return is. And I've never thought about it before because I didn't know the concept. But my relationship, 10-year relationship ended when I was 29. And it was a guillotine style moment. Sorry.
I'm so excited for mine now.
Like,
guys, my 10-year relationship.
It's fine. You have it way more together than I ever did. I think that helps. But it was guillotine style fashion. Did not
and
see
you
it coming.
29.
He told me he was gay out of nowhere. Had absolutely no idea. And I was 29.
How old was he?
30. Mm. 30.
Oh, do men have Saturn returns?
Yeah, they do.
So it could have been his as well.
Yeah. Sure.
Well, that's what I was thinking. I mean, it's kind of like, that's the thing. It's about authenticity. So if you're not being true to yourself, it just really confronts you with that at that time.
That's so weird. I'm going to do some digging later and when it is exactly. But that is really strange because that is, I think it was a month after I turned 29.
Wow. Yeah.
I think September 13th. It's burned into my brain.
That must have been intense.
Yeah, it was.
And you didn't. You just had absolutely no idea.
No, we'd just been together forever, so it just didn't. Just never occurred to me ever. There were no. Wow. At least I thought there were no signs, but there probably were. But I just wouldn't know. So yeah, it was. Yeah, interesting.
Are you still friends?
Yeah, really good friends. Yeah, nice. Really good friends.
I mean, there you go. That is like a classic Saturn from both of your sides.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of about being true to yourself.
Yeah.
And sometimes I don't think we realise that we're not being true to ourselves, you know, through like societal conditioning, expectations, trying to be validated by whether it's our peers or our parents. So we often start pursuing things from quite a young age that might not be right for us, you know, with that align with our sort of intrinsic values.
Yeah.
And then often during our Saturn return, like, it's why you get people having big career shifts that it seems like it's out of nowhere. Like some people will just suddenly change and like start up a business and like, well, that's random. Mm. But actually it's probably been brewing in them for a really long time. They just at that point had the courage to change course.
I don't want to put words in your mouth or like assume anything about your life, but looking at the course of like how everything happened for you, I guess you kind of ended up on a trajectory at a young age that is quite hard to
get off.
Yeah.
Like, you can't just become unfamous, really.
You know what's funny about that is that's actually kind of what I wanted.
Yeah.
Because obviously, you know, to add context, I did a reality show when I was in my early 20s. And then when I was on there, I knew that it wasn't, that trajectory wasn't the one that I wanted to go down. Mm. But it was like I was already on the train. Do you know what I mean? It was going quite fast.
Yeah.
And I just sort of jumped off it. And I remember at the time when I spoke to one of the heads of the company that it was NBC that did the show. And they said, you know, what do you want? What do you want in order to stay? And I was like, I don't want to stay. And then he was like, well, what do you want then? And I said, normality. And I write about this in the book. And he was like, it's overrated. And at that time, I think I felt like a hot air balloon taking off with no means of coming back down. Like, I was just, didn't feel like the master of my fate, just a bystander to it. And I didn't want that. And I think that's, fame is an interesting thing, especially at a young age, because you don't really know who you are, but you're going to be crafted into something by, whether that's the press, might be a label that you're signed with, or a production company, and they're going to have an agenda for how they want you to be. And sometimes, you know, hopefully for people that will be aligned with what they really want, but often it's not, because we don't know who we are at 21.
21?
God, no.
No,
you're
21. Yeah.
Fuck. Yeah. That's crazy young.
Yeah.
And it's early. Yeah, just in terms of, like, I'd say the world, we kind of know, you know what train you're getting on now if you do any kind of reality TV, because we're so used to the formula.
Yeah, we didn't then.
No.
We sort of thought this will disappear and, like, no one will know about it or it will be successful. We didn't think about the sort of everything else.
Yeah.
But in a weird way, perhaps my experience was a little more heightened because it was on TV, but I don't think it was necessarily that different from anyone else my age, because, you know, in your early 20s, you're trying different things on for size and just seeing what fits. The only difference is, and we started talking about it before we were recording, is that you get pigeonholed in a certain area.
Mm.
And I think I've tried really hard to cultivate and create a life that feels like very authentic to me and based on something that I love. But that also is part of the reason I'm able to do it. Do you see what I mean? It's sort of like a double-edged sword. And I think in the UK especially, we can be guilty of pigeonholing people and trying to keep them there.
Women particularly.
Yeah. It's like, oh, well, she did that. That's all she'll ever be. And I do notice that sometimes, but because I've done a lot of work on it myself, I'm okay with it. Whereas I think in my late 20s, I felt very much like that's all I'm ever going to be able to be.
Yeah, and that's frustrating.
It was really frustrating.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, people are always going to try and limit others, especially if they limit themselves. I think that's what we have to recognize online, is when someone, and, you know, we all experience it to varying degrees, but if someone's saying, oh, she can't do that, or she's too this, or she's too that, you really have to recognize that they're speaking to themselves. They're saying that's a limitation that they put on themselves. That's like they've told themselves they can't do something for whatever reason. So they're just transferring that onto the internet, onto a stranger they don't know.
God, I've never thought about it. That's actually, like, I've just, like, my world's just fallen out from underneath me. Well, quietly, while we've been talking. Yeah. But shit, guys. But about how, about people only limit, people who limit themselves limit other people. Like, that,
of course, yeah.
Because the biggest dreamers I know would never shit on anyone else.
Well, that's the thing. But the people that comment online as well, like, if you actually step away from that, because obviously it can be upsetting. But the, like you say, the people that you are inspired by that are living a life that's incredible are not the people that's saying, oh, she can't do that, or she's too this, or look at that.
Because you must have had, I'm imagining, and I don't read it, but I'm imagining that you've had a lot, like Daily Mail journalism.
Yeah.
Like, you must have been fodder for a lot of that for your 20s.
Yeah, which I don't think I recognised at the time. probably am only starting to now the impact of that. Mm-hmm. And also, like, as soon as I'm saying that, I have to acknowledge that there's a voice in my head that's acknowledging the listener that might be thinking, oh, well, you know, privileged girl, got famous young, why should I, you know, feel sorry for her?
You're not asking anyone to feel sorry for you. No. You're just telling your story.
But I'm just saying, like, that's what it's like, you know? Because, like, even online, when people see someone that's got a lot, and they might be speaking about anxiety or mental health, and they're like, oh, well, they've got everything. They can't. And it's like, we've got to stop that as well. Because whilst I acknowledge I got dealt a, you know, good hand and had a lot of opportunity, it was really hard being a 20-something-year-old girl in the public eye and being, you know, the way the Daily Mail write about people is a very specific way that's kind of weaponizes the way women feel about themselves already and uses it against each other, and also keeps this kind of fear-based mentality where it's like, even as a reader, you know, it's sort of like the comment section of the Daily Mail. It's like the worst place in humanity.
It's the cruelest place on the internet.
It's like, do not go there. But when, you know, I was in my 20s and I would sometimes, and I regret it. And I was also someone that would, even when the show first aired, I would see, you know, there would be thousands of tweets and stuff, and I'd be looking through them trying to sort of process what was happening. And even if, you know, 999 of them were positive, that one out of 1,000 that wasn't was the only one that I saw.
Yeah.
And again, to kind of reverse that thing of people that limit themselves will try and limit other people, you can only really feel shamed by something if you carry that in yourself. So you can only be made to feel insecure about something if you feel insecure about it in yourself. But again, like, there aren't many 21-year-olds that have a thick skin that are like feeling super confident in their abilities and who they are. You're just kind of trying to navigate the world, and a lot of it is based on how people respond to you. Do you know what I mean?
I had not too dissimilar experience when I was 17, and the Daily Mail would write about me throughout my late teens and early 20s, and I would without fail go to the comments section. And it is self-harm, but I think I was trying to validate my own insecurity a lot in a really perverse sort of way. And it was like, all these people were right about me in my head. Now I'm like, were they though? Like, these grown adults with all that to say about a 17-year-old, but okay.
But exactly. So, and that's so weird. And it's just become sort of spread out through social media. It's probably not as, I guess it depends who you are and how you're being spoken to. But yeah, it's a very, and I don't know, I would like journalists to take a bit more responsibility over that, because it's often women writing these articles.
About women.
About women.
Yeah.
And it's this sort of toxic feminine, like, shame cycle that we're in, where it's like, write horrible things about someone's cellulite and body. The person that's reading it's like, oh my God, if they're being spoken to about like that, then I'm even worse. But also I'm kind of enjoying that someone that has all these things is being degraded, because it makes me feel a bit better. It's that sort of Schadenfreude mentality of like, someone else's pain gives you a little bit of pleasure.
I also imagine, and again, I come obviously from an area of extreme privilege, and the way that I've been spoken about, it makes it you'd be hard pushed to feel sorry for me, which is fair fucks, because I'm not asking anyone to feel sorry for me. But I imagine doing the show that you did as well, it's so easy for papers to strip you of humanity, and people can convince themselves that they can say whatever about you, because it's like, oh, well, she's so lucky, she's got this and this and this.
Yeah, and also we have to acknowledge that whilst it was a reality show, it was very much not real life.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what I find hilarious, when people still think that the version of me in Made in Chelsea was not who I am. It never has been, never was, in terms of, I did not walk around Chelsea in a Rolls Royce. I don't know anyone that does, to be honest. But even that, I was like, no, I know what you're trying to create, but that person that lives the life that you want to depict yeah. doesn't go around in a Rolls Royce.
So
but I would like.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's like drugs. I don't know.
I don't know who is, but. Yeah. But
maybe we should do that, Al.
Do you think?
Yeah. It'd be good for the brand.
Like, fake it till you make it.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
It's so fascinating. And I want to ask this question. Do you think you regret doing reality TV? Do you think you regret it? If you had your time over, would you still do it?
For that time, probably from like 25 up until 30, even a bit after 30, I was in a sort of paralyzing state of regret. Looking right. back, thinking I wish I'd made different choices, I wish I didn't do that, or I wish at least I took advantage of it and rather than just jumping off the train. And then kind of not being able to fully embrace where I was at. So I was just, and then within that, I became very much like, and I use this word delicately because I'm excluding victims of abuse now, but I was like stuck in my own victim mentality of like, I was annoyed at myself. Do you see what I mean? Whereas now I don't like to have regrets about anything because I can see retrospectively that how beautifully everything unfolds in a way that you can never predict and you could never map out for yourself. It's far more magnificent than we could. Like, we like to think, okay, I want to achieve this and I'm at A and this is B and this is, I just walk and I get there. And then suddenly we get thrown off track and like take all these detours and go in these directions we never anticipated. And we can feel annoyed about that, but actually it we'll either end up getting to where we want to be, but we'll just have picked up the wisdom we needed to get there. Or we end up somewhere far greater than we could have ever imagined or conceptualized for ourselves. And I see that now, and I see that very much post Saturn return. And that's what I think my Saturn return was about. Because, you know, if we kind of go more deeply into it, your Saturn return is like your big, I guess, kind of wake up call in a way. But we also have Saturn squares and oppositions. So if you look back at your life at 7, 14, 21, up until your Saturn return, those are all sort of visits from Saturn. So I write about this in the book. And whether or not you want to look at it astrologically, those are quite big, key, pivotal moments as we sort of have a sense of our identity, our autonomy. We at 21, we kind of think we're an adult a bit. We think we know what we want and can make decisions for ourselves, but we often just mess it up. So I look back at my 21-year-old self with a lot more humility because I was trying to present something that I thought would alleviate the feelings that I had throughout my teenage years that I didn't really know how to place in the world. And that was more the sort of introspective side of me, the poetry, the melancholy, all these things that I didn't really see as positive, that now I do. Mm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally.
And so that, like, whilst I could sit here and say, oh, I wish I would never do reality TV now, whilst that is true, the 21-year-old version of Kagi wanted to, for whatever reason, because perhaps that I wanted to present myself in that way for reasons that I've just kind of explained in my, you know, teen years and stuff. And I don't regret doing it because by doing it, it made me realize that that didn't make me happy. And it kind of put me on this weird journey and like quest for authenticity, even though I didn't recognize it at the time. And now I feel like I'm in that place. And the difference is now, I know it's quite rare, kind of to echo what you just said, of when people start, become famous, they can't stop. I actually think I'm incredibly lucky that I was famous in that sort of overnight fame way. And then I managed to pull away, and then I've managed to come back with more of, I'd say I have more of a community than an audience. It's a very different energy. An audience can kind of throw you up very quickly and tear you down, whereas a community is like along for the ride.
Yeah.
And I like that distinction.
I do too.
Yeah. And I think that I'm very fortunate to have experienced both, you know, to have that kind of taste of fame and to be able to pull it away.
Yeah. I like what you just said then, because I think that's something that I think about a lot is, you know, I try and not have regrets. I mean, I still do, but I try. But I try and have full respect for what the old me wanted in that time at that moment, because that was just as valid then as what I feel now exactly. is. And I think we can forget that, right? We can just think, oh, I was young and stupid. But actually, that was just as important for me at that time. And I think that's really important.
And also, what's the use in like shaming our past version of self? Like, I kind of live by the belief that we're all doing the best we can with the tools and the self-awareness we have available. So what, you know, 21-year-old us, that's all we knew. And we're just trying to survive and fit in and be liked. And of course, now we do things differently because we know more and we know the outcome of certain things. And that's just part of the journey. And that's how we kind of, that's why failure is also so important, you know? I think we stop ourselves from doing things because we're so afraid of failing. But actually, I've learned so much from failing. And my 20s in many ways felt like I experienced a lot of them.
I want to talk about that. But I'm really interested in the regret thing, because do you feel like you had anything to forgive of yourself? Do you feel like you put your regrets down? When you have a regret, and I think people do have regrets, there is such a feeling of shame around them. And you do carry it, I imagine, forever, I think forever. And I don't know if you have any advice just based on your experiences of what you do with that regret, where you put it. Do you honour it or do you try and cure it? Where do you put it?
It's a great question. It's actually something that I'm working on sort of in real time at the moment. So this is very much a work in progress, and the advice I can give, I'll give the best I can, because it's only fully coming to my awareness. Because like I said, in my 20s, I did have a lot of shame over the decisions I had made. And it's heavy. Shame's a very, very heavy feeling, and it's all internalized and it kind of sits in the body. And whilst I've shifted my perspective and feel very grateful to be where I'm at now and feel like I'm creating a life that feels very aligned. So if someone comes up to me and they're like, I love the podcast and I love the book, I just get the most like heartwarming feeling, like I love it. But if someone comes up and they're like, I liked your main Chelsea, it does still give me this little like thing, because I think I tried so hard to move away from that. And I think it's not just the show. I think that to make this kind of relevant to anyone that's listening, when we make decisions that we regret and we mess up and we do bad things or whatever, like when we wrap that up in shame and kind of bury it, it doesn't go any, I think like saying, it doesn't go anywhere, but that doesn't mean that we have to carry it forever. It's just unpacking that is the delicate thing. And I think sometimes we need support, whether that's a therapist, to kind of really hold space for that process. Because when you shame yourself about it, how can you bring it out and like hold it? Do you know what I mean? And let it go. So I'm kind of in this process at the moment of unpacking like, why I hold shame. And to kind of go back to a point I made earlier, I think we can only, if someone makes us feel shamed, if like a comment online or like a comment from a friend or a boyfriend or a partner makes us feel that sense of shame, it's usually an indication that we're carrying it. Of course, if someone's actually being really shaming to you, that's different. But sometimes like they might not be. And it just puts us back in that space. And that's something that I've noticed about myself and trying to, you know, make peace with those past versions of myself and fully understand or fully like accept, you know. And I'm not 100% sure whether I'm there, but I'm getting much closer. And one of the sort of ways that I'm trying to do that at the moment is like taking the time to reframe all the things that I felt shamed for and actually celebrate them, you know. So I think for women particularly as well, I was just listening on the way here to Call Her Daddy's podcast with Madison Beer. Is it Madison Beer? And she was talking about like being sexually shamed as like a young girl and stuff. And it just, even just listening to it, I was like, how much I didn't think stuff like that impacted me, but just the way that kind of thinking just as like it's all coming, but you know, women sort of being overly sexualized and shamed for that very thing. It's a really complex part of society that I don't think we fully acknowledge, and we carry it and we internalize it because it's our fault as women that we're sexual. And that's just something that I'm trying to like unpack. It's kind of like sexual shame.
Yeah. And a lot of us probably have it and don't even know that we carry it.
Yeah. Because it's so normalized to feel that way.
Right.
Oh my God. Yeah. If you think back to relationships you had at school, or not even relationships, or like just behaviors or whatever that you, as a teenager, and then you look back as an adult, you're like, oh God, I wouldn't have done any of that. But then it's just like, but then why do I feel so angry or so gross about something that happened to a child? Because if you saw another child doing what you did as a child, you'd be like, oh, children, teenagers, oh, what are they like? But when it's you, you're like, so you've got this like adult anger for a teenager's actions, which is actually a bit wild.
Yeah. And in this, the interview that I was listening to, I didn't realize, but like if a young girl's putting up anything online, like it's called fatherless, they're like, oh, fatherless behavior. And it's like shaming the girl for like being, and it's like,
daddy issues. Seriously, it's the worst thing. It's like, how are you blaming women for their dads fucking them up?
But this is what I mean. Like the accountability is all on the woman.
Yeah.
And that sort of transcends like all forms of media in the way that women get teared down for things that often men do to them.
Mm.
I don't know how we got onto this, but anyway, it kind of ties into like
it's fascinating,
what I'm trying to unravel about myself. And I think it also kind of ties into this place that I'm at in my life where I think society tells us that women in their 30s are like ready to be discarded. And if they haven't been picked by a man, then they kind of lose their worth, and that they shouldn't turn grey or get wrinkles or all of these things. And that we become less than. But actually, I feel that it's because we become more than, but society tries to keep us small because it's afraid of that.
Mm.
And having to unpack like everything that goes into it. And I think a big part of that is like a woman that owns her sexuality and doesn't feel shamed by it is a powerful thing.
It's terrifying to everyone else.
Not to make it a sort of men versus women thing, because it's not about that at all. But it kind of just goes far deeper. It's like, I don't know, I'd really invite women that are perhaps listening to this, and I'm sure a lot of your audience is female, to kind of start questioning some of this stuff. Because even like what we talked about when you came on the podcast, that we just absorb it and don't try and actually decondition.
Or even question it.
Or even question. It's just like, oh, that's the way it is.
That sentence that you said is so, I
to me, that is completely spot on, in that when we become more than, suddenly we are viewed as less than and our value becomes less than. Mm-hmm. And it's so true. And that works straight into the hands of the patriarchy, right? It's perfect.
Yeah, exactly.
It makes so much sense. Yeah, I love that.
It's almost like someone last month was like, okay, this is where they really like initiate into that stage and kind of fully step into knowing who they are. So let's put out loads and loads of stuff to make them feel as disempowered as possible.
Yeah, let's tell them who they should be.
Make them feel preoccupied with sort of altering their bodies and changing their faces and dyeing their hair and thinking that they need to have all the beauty treatments and buy all the clothes so that they don't recognize their own power.
And stay small.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, stay busy. That's crazy. I mean, it's not crazy. I mean, it is crazy. It's just how, like, it's annoying. Yeah. When you start unpicking it, you're like, oh God, this is the biggest bun. Like, biggest, but it's like the top drawer in like your mum's cupboard, just like full of absolute chaos.
Yeah.
Straight, like headphones, string, everything.
But it just amazes me how so much of this stuff, like, I never so much as even questioned any of this. Like, probably not until about 5 years ago. And it was because I was forced to. I was like, you know, led to water. That's not the right phrase. You know what I mean? I was, you know, someone had to do it for me, had to like bring me to the point where I would be like, oh yeah, that isn't right. Like I'm going to question that. Oh, I'm going to challenge that. And it just baffles me. And I guess it's something that probably I still feel a bit of shame about. It just baffles me that we're just so, we so blindly go with the status quo and that we don't question and challenge and like the outrageous things that some of the outrageous things that our society puts on us and that we just like quietly accept. I just find it crazy.
I know. But I guess at the same time, you know, this whole sort of selling empowerment, like if we were taught to feel complete and wonderful about ourselves, then capitalism wouldn't exist in the way that it does.
Yeah. And I do think humans are generally good at just following the pack and just going with the
status quo.
Not questioning. And yeah, I don't know. It's just, it's interesting.
Yeah. So did you, when you, with your Saturn return, did you feel like, I don't know, because I don't know how it works, and obviously I've got this impending sense of dread that it's coming. How long does it last for? And did you feel, while you were in it, like you've just, like when Mercury's in retrograde and you're just, I'm just going to get through this time of absolute hell and then everything will be better? Or did you sort of come back and look at it all retrospectively?
So it lasts about, for the first part, it lasts about 2.5 years.
Oh, Christ. I'm terrified. No, this is fun.
But at the time, I was sort of aware and I wasn't. Because I remember actually I found a Word document that me and Nora, the astrologer, she'd done a reading for me and she'd sent back like all these notes and stuff. And I then commented under the notes and she'd said, you're going through your Saturn return. The stuff before that was like about creativity and a new project. And I'd written underneath, I was like, guess what? The project I'm working on is called like Saturn Return. And that was when I thought I was going to make it into a TV show. So who knows, maybe I still will.
I think you should.
But I wasn't thinking when stuff was going wrong, this is my Saturn return. Mm. I was just thinking that stuff was going wrong. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? I was preoccupied with like, is this the right relationship that I'm supposed to be in? Because it doesn't really feel that right. But I'm 29 and everyone's kind of getting engaged or having kids. Mm. And so this kind of fits my life. And then with the career shame, I was pursuing music and I, you know, like I said, I was releasing music, but I had like severe performance anxiety that was so painful that made me be like, I don't know how I can actually do this as a career. And anyone that works in the music industry will know it's sort of feast or famine. It's really hard. Mm. It's a really hard thing to pursue. But then I also had the sort of the hangover of the fame of Made in Chelsea that was this sort of explosive overnight thing, and then just really felt like in comparison to that, like in the shadows of that. Yeah. Does that make sense?
It's a really horrible conflicting place to be, because yeah. it's like most people, if they're trying to make it in the music industry, get to do it in the privacy
in
of
anonymity.
Their own.
Yeah. Yeah. And anonymity. I didn't have that.
No. That's such a so everybody's point. Watching you try something, which is yeah. to be watched yeah. trying.
Honestly,
is the hardest.
When I have like that much anxiety, like music for me is the most personal, vulnerable place that exists in me.
Yeah.
And so to put that out, like I couldn't sing in front of anyone for most of my life. The first time I ever sung in front of anybody was on Made in Chelsea. Yeah, that was
no.
the yeah, that was my first ever gig, and it was filmed by six cameras, every angle, going out on national TV. But because I was like,
oh my God.
They orchestrated that because they'd said, you know, what do you like to do? And I said, I like singing, but I'm absolutely terrified to do it in front of it. Like I went to drama school, I did a singing semester and I couldn't get up in the class. Like I actually just
really
could not open my mouth. And then I was suddenly doing, my family was like, what's going on? What do you mean you're singing on the first episode? And I think from their side, they probably thought, if this is awful, this is great TV. And if it's great, it's great TV. So yeah. there was no real... And I didn't really recognize that naively at the time. And then that sort of catapulted me into this weird world where I was like navigating fame whilst doing music on the side, but the music industry, I was so green, like I didn't
yeah.
know anything. I like had barely ever performed and was just starting to write music. And it felt like there were these two trajectories, which was like, use Made in Chelsea, ride that wave
yeah.
and exploit it for all that you can
yeah.
and kind of get the more pop starry thing off the back of that, or completely duck out and start from the beginning.
Yeah.
And I took that route, but then, like you said, it was this weird thing because then the press would like pick up on things and be like, oh, mixed reviews for like Khaki's Foot. And it was just like
so horrible.
Because I also didn't have, because I ducked out, I didn't have any agent or matter, like I didn't have any team. I just was like doing it from the very beginning, again, quite naively. And then had that kind of audience that wasn't my audience for music.
Yeah.
So it was that audience that were like, let's tear her down.
Let's
I mean, obviously I had some people that just like really loved me and supported me. And so, you know, some of them have followed me the whole way through, which is such a lovely thing. But the pathway from like reality TV to anything really is not, especially music, is not a well-trod path that many have done successfully.
No, I can't think of anyone.
No, and people probably assume if you have that, have a level of fame, like it's going to be easy for you to, you know,
springboard into something
exactly,
else.
Exactly, yeah.
I think
but
it
it's
can
not.
Be. It depends the way you do it. But I just did it in this like, I want to start again and I want to learn the proper way. But and luckily, you know, when I was releasing music before I started the whole Saturn Returns project, it had a really nice reception. Like it felt really good. But I honestly felt like a little bit traumatized from the early years. Because imagine, it's like you want to be a singer or you like singing and you go and do a school concert and like the whole of the auditorium like laughs at you. That's kind of what it felt
like. Yeah, that's like, I couldn't.
And it's like you're basically there naked, like vulnerable on stage.
Yeah, no.
So, oh yeah. my God.
And
yeah.
I'm not, look, it wasn't that bad, but because it was, I felt so not confident in it anyway.
Yeah.
That like all I needed was one person to kind of be unsure. And I was like, oh no.
Yeah.
Did you move to LA for singing, like to pursue singing?
Yeah. So okay. I went there kind of because of it was the kind of entertainment. Well, also because a lot of people had said, because I was also doing acting in London. And when I would go out for roles and stuff, they would often be like, the reality TV thing isn't really.
Right.
So whereas in the States, it didn't matter.
Okay.
But then I ended up doing, yeah, a lot more music there. And that's the project that I started putting out. Mm. And I did actually go and do another project during the pandemic that I'm going to release, because it's almost like I now know from so many people that I've spoken to on the podcast and like all the work that I've done, I'm like, the thing that you're most afraid of, like fucking do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just like, also I'm getting got to a point now where I don't I don't want to be a pop star. I don't need anyone to validate me. It's like, it's a soul thing for me. Like, it makes me feel so happy to be able to write and express myself creatively. And I think a lot of us feel that way, but we just, it kind of gets shamed out of us, or we're like, oh, well, that's not my career, so I'm not going to do that anymore. Whereas I kind of just want to be like, fuck it, I'm going to do it.
I love that.
Because I can and I want to.
What was moving to LA like? Because you, what age were you, did you say? Sorry.
27.
So that was in the period when it was really fraught. You were kind of dealing with a lot of shame and regret. And I imagine it was like an anxious time, not to put words in your mouth.
Yeah. I think I was in a relationship at the time that I think he wanted to sort of settle down and have kids, and I just didn't feel that was right for me or like my path. I just really craved freedom, and I think I wanted to escape a little bit. And when I initially, now looking back, like LA feels like such a terrifying thing to do, but I very freely would just move country and not really...
Well...
Imagine, Al, that kind of level of spontaneity.
No, I mean, also, no. I moved to Australia after meeting Chelsea. That's how much I like, that's how far I wanted to get. But I do love Australia.
Yeah.
But
I can imagine London felt very small after you did that.
It did after that. And that's what's really interesting about moving away, like coming back and feeling sort of anchored in who I am and what I want to do. It's like London's just a completely different place. It's a different city. I love it.
Yeah.
Whereas around 27, I was like, I don't think I ever want to live here again.
Yeah.
Because it did feel very small. And I saw right in the book, I'm like, the ghost of Maiden Chelsea past and too many ex-boyfriends lurked around many corners.
Yeah, fair enough.
But like to me, LA feels like, I'm just imagining you at that point when you're probably a bit lost.
Yeah.
And you just don't know what to do when you're
like most
kind of
people in LA.
Exactly. Yeah.
And you get there and you're just in this sort of sea of drifting souls. Yeah.
Yeah. And it sounds like a very, very tough place.
It's tough.
From what I've heard from people that have moved there and then they've not enjoyed, it hasn't been what they expected. And it's just, I've heard it's one of those places that like chews you up and spits you out. And I imagine it to like heighten everything that you're feeling.
Yeah, it probably did. But I think there's a reason that I gravitated towards it. You know, I often describe LA as a place where fame is like their religion and beauty and youth are these commodities. And so often it attracts people that have this appetite for fame or escapism, often both. And I probably did. But it does, the facade of it slips over time. Like the sort of glossy coat wears off a little bit, and the underbelly is that it's like a lot of people there to pursue something that a dream that might not be realized. But equally, there's a lot of people that do. I just think, yeah, I look back at that time. I was so lucky to be able to go and to have that experience, but I wouldn't want to go back. I found it really lonely.
Really
lonely.
You seem very grounded, I guess would be the word now, to your life. There doesn't feel like there's any energy that isn't like calm and where it should be.
You know what? Loads of people say that. I'm like, really?
Well,
I went and did this panel talk. I don't know if I told you this the other day, but it was one of those ones where I was sitting with people that I have sort of idolized in a way, like having these conversations, and whenever I spoke afterwards, this voice comes into my head that's like, what did you just say? What does that even mean? Like, do you know what you're talking about? I'm like, no, I don't really. And then afterwards, this woman said, she was like looking at me and she was like, you've got a really calm energy about you. I was like, oh, thanks. And she was like, yeah, you make me feel like everything's going to be okay by you being here.
Yeah,
and I was like, really?
Yeah.
We're all in a lot of trouble.
No, it's true. I can't imagine you being rattled. I really can't.
I just think a lot about stuff. So I kind of can articulate feelings and everything. But equally, I am still quite prone to being quite anxious. I probably don't help that by having loads of tea, drink loads of tea.
I mean, that could be so much worse. Like, you could be like, I'm doing like loads of cocaine.
Yeah.
I drink loads of tea.
That whole lifestyle.
Yeah, my vice is these days a tea. So yeah, that probably reflects someone that's quite calm and grounded.
I think but so.
Decaf tea. Yeah. As your friend. Yeah.
Yeah, I need to have more. But yeah, yeah. I guess I do. I guess I do.
Something. You seem very calm. Very good. Like, I imagine, like, okay, imagine a crisis befalls us now. Like, either side of me would be very different energy in the crisis.
Absolutely. Yes. I'd be like on the ceiling.
Yeah. Alex would explode. I can't.
I do think I can catastrophize about things, though, because, you know, that's the other side to thinking about things a lot. It's like when something hypothetically might go wrong.
Yeah.
I'll start overanalyzing why that might be, and I have to stop myself from doing that.
I think that's just part of the female condition.
I think it's just the condition. Well, I don't think it's specific to female.
I agree, except we talked about this the other day, and actually just last night after the alarm went, you know, all our alarms went on our phones.
Mine didn't. Yeah.
Well, you won't. They probably did that on purpose. They're probably like, she can't handle this. We won't give that to her. But everybody else's alarms went. And when we got into bed last night, because obviously I've just had the baby, and I said to my Alex, I was like, oh, God, it really makes you think, you know, maybe there's just a nuclear bomb or something's going to come. Like, why are they giving us this? Like, something bad's going to be happening, surely. And then I looked over him and I was like, do you not worry about this stuff? He just looked at me and was like, no. I was like, what do you mean, no? Like, and I was like, this stuff never worries you? He's like, no, I don't want to suffer twice. I was like, God damn that logic.
I would love to live in my husband's head for a day. Yeah. Just a day.
Just a day.
I'm like, just looking at you like so blissfully empty in there.
The alarm annoyed him. Like, the alarm just, he was like, oh God, that's loud. It didn't make him think like, well, the world's going to end. I was like, imagine that's your first thing. Just a little bit mild annoyance. Can't relate. I just can't relate.
What, and yours was? Well, this is the beginning.
This is the end.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, I've always said this about the apocalypse. I wouldn't run. I wouldn't fight. I would just die because I couldn't be bothered. I wouldn't want to live in a post-apocalyptic world. It just doesn't sound much fun. But now I've got a baby.
Yeah, you have to.
Everything.
Yeah. So now I'm like, great. So now we have to try and survive. And she'll be fuck all help because she's absolutely tiny. She can't walk. She can't be able to carry around.
Okay, you really do catastrophize.
I'm just spiraling.
I've got my Saturn return coming. I'm freaking out. Can I just Google the date to know? Oh, Christ. I can't fall apart
just
now.
I've got a lot of friends that went through it was things levelling up.
Thank you. I don't even think that's true, but I appreciate you saying that to me. When's my Saturn return?
I just put in my birthday and it's come up with the date that the date that I slept.
No way.
Not the date, but the month. Break,
yeah.
Yeah. The September month. 2017.
Bollocks, mine's coming in March.
I can't wait for that.
Me neither. Shit. I have a dependable now. I can't fall apart. See, before I didn't care. I was like, everything can go to shit. It doesn't matter. But it can't now. Oh no. Oh God. So my first waxing square was July 2001. And then my August 2008. These do actually feel like quite pivotal times. I'm dreading that now. March will be fun. Oh well.
I'm going to book a holiday for March.
Me too. And so then our holiday is going to have to be a year, 2.5 years long. That's how long.
It's fine, I can do it. It's fine.
For fuck's sake.
Well, okay. On that happy note, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. I hope I haven't terrified you too much.
I know you have, but it's...
I have.
But what do you need to prepare? Fail to prepare and prepare to fail. So knowledge is power. Now I know I'm armed with the knowledge that it's coming.
Yeah, just having that awareness, I think.
That's
got to help. It's got to.
This is what we actually had an astrologist on the podcast recently, and she said that astrology is the weather and knowledge about it is basically the umbrella.
Yeah.
So at least now I've had my gale, I've had my warning. I've had siren go. So now I can just batten down the hatches. Not see anyone for 2.5 years whilst I try and get on top of everything. But at least I'll have your podcast and your book.
You'll have my podcast and the book. And also we're launching courses as well.
Amazing.
Kind of helping people like navigate that time. So that's really exciting.
Nice. Yeah, I need that.
Yes, I do.
I'll see you there.
Oh, okay. I'm over mine, but I still need it anyway. We'll put the links to all of that in the show notes.
Amazing, thank you.
And where can people find you online?
You can find me on Instagram at Kaggy's World and Saturn Returns at saturnreturns.co.uk.
Amazing, thank you so much. Should I Delete That is part of the Acast Creator Network.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.